Welcome to the Change Society podcast with Pat Lyons.
If you want real change, you need transformation. The symbolic effect of changing or addressing not just the budgeting process that everybody hates, but also the performance evaluation appraisal process that everybody hates. And we have views on that as well. Unless you address ideally both, but at least the budgeting process. All talk about radical change is just nice words.
There probably isn't a better way to introduce this show than the words of our guest, Beate Bogsnes. Beate, winner of the Harvard Business Review McKinsey Management Innovation Award, is the undisputed leader of the Beyond Budgeting movement, the topic of today's episode. Lots of ground was covered in this one, including where the movement was originally inspired, how the adoption of Beyond Budgeting has increased since the pandemic, how to get the CFO and executive team on board with rolling budgets, and how Handelsbank can operate with no budgets, targets, or individual bonuses. The topic becomes more than just about the budgeting process, though. It's an exercise in challenging traditional management and leadership principles that can unlock the true potential of organisations normally slowed by bureaucracy and red tape. As usual, a ton of value for any executive or leadership team looking to change and innovate their business. Enjoy the show.
Beate, welcome to the Change Society podcast. We've been threatening to do this show for a while, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. How are you today? That's the first important question. And where are you?
Hi, Pat. Good to see you, and thank you for the invitation. I'm fine, and I'm in Norway, in my hometown of Stavanger.
Fantastic.
Home office, obviously.
Yeah, good stuff. So I think for all of the listeners today, it'd be great to get an introduction from yourself. Of course, we're going to be talking about Beyond Budgeting and why that's really important now in a post-pandemic world. But before we get into this podcast, be great to have an intro, who you are, where it all started, and maybe even a claim to fame.
So I'm based in the corporate finance team in a company called Equinor. We used to be called Statoil, 20,000 employees with global operations. And we started our Beyond Budgeting journey many years ago, actually back in 2005. So I've been heading up that, and you might wonder, are we finished? But this is not a project, this is a journey where you get braver along the way. I'm also the chairman of the Beyond Budgeting Roundtable, an international network of companies interested in Beyond Budgeting. And my journey actually started earlier than 2005, because in the mid 90s, I worked in a petrochemicals company called Borealis. It was Europe's largest at the time, headquartered in Copenhagen. And through some coincidences, we got a chance to kick out the budget. And guess what? It worked. One example, cost actually came down. So that was worked very well. I moved then from finance over to human resources, heading up HR for some years before I returned to Equinor as corporate controller for our international activities. And my hobby then was to pester my colleagues with the stupidity of the budgeting that we were doing. And then we went together to the executive committee in 2005 and proposed not just to kick out the budget, because now this had become broader. It was about actually changing much of how we were leading and managing. And we got the yes, and since then, I've been working full-time on this. So, and in addition, I spend quite a lot of time outside of Equinor, helping companies get started on Beyond Budgeting journeys, speaking and doing stuff like this.
Fantastic. So I suppose the big question is, what is Beyond Budgeting?
We often get that question, and for good reasons. And Beyond Budgeting is actually a somewhat misleading name, because the purpose of Beyond Budgeting is not necessarily to get rid of budgets. The purpose is to create organizations which are more dynamic, more flexible, more adaptive, more viable, if you want, and also more human. And in order to achieve that, we need to change radically traditional management. And at the core of traditional management, we find not just the budgeting process, but also the budgeting mindset. So this is where the name is coming from. But every time I say beyond budgeting, I would like you to think business agility, because that is what this is about. And if you have a proposal for a better name, please, it has to be much better, but we are actually considering or looking for a better name.
Maybe I'll get back to you on that. We could run a poll with the Change Society. I think it's a great name, and it's also a great book. We'll put the book details in the show notes. So you said a couple of interesting things there around, you know, creating dynamic organizations, more human-based organizations, to think of business agility. And I remember you coming to our future business session that we did with 200 executives. Well, it must have been about 3 years ago now. And you were talking about Scandinavian-based businesses and the heritage of Scandinavian-based businesses and the management styles there and the link to the brilliant business performance at the back end. So could you unpack a bit around the heritage of, you know, Scandinavian management techniques, beyond budgeting, and now how that's starting to proliferate around the globe across all industries and all organizations?
You are correct that a number of Scandinavian companies are on a beyond budgeting journey, and it is more common in Scandinavia than in other parts of the world. And I guess it has something to do with our culture, which is very much about low power distance, informal, trusting people, and so on. And obviously, that is something that gives you tailwind in the beyond budgeting implementation. But there was actually, you know, beyond budgeting was inspired by companies who rebelled against traditional budgeting. And I just mentioned one example in who we are. But there were also companies outside of Scandinavia, including in the UK, who inspired this movement. Today, there is interest all over the world. It's amazing. It has taken quite some time. We have been going since these principles were actually formulated back in 1998, a few years before the Agile Manifesto, actually, which is quite interesting because despite the many similarities between Agile and beyond budgeting, there was no contact whatsoever between these two communities back then. That has radically changed. Today we are in close contact for good reasons, because as I said, this is about business agility.
So you mentioned there about the principles of beyond budgeting, and I know there's 12, and we probably haven't got time in this podcast to unpack all of them, but what would be interesting is to maybe touch on some of them and then maybe link that into, you know, the antithesis of those principles and the two main traditional management principles that beyond budgeting is looking to challenge and reverse.
The 12 principles are divided into 6 leadership principles and 6 principles or recommendations around management processes. And this is important because I think that what we say in these leadership principles around purpose, autonomy, transparency, and so on, is not necessarily that unique. There are many other movements, communities out there using the same words and having similar messages. But very often, these communities, these models, haven't reflected very much about what kind of management processes you need to activate these leadership beliefs. And likewise, there are many good management models out there, but they have often not reflected much about what kind of leadership is needed to underpin this. And for us, the coherence between the two is key. We need to address both, and we have to make sure that there is consistency between what we preach and what we practice, which is very often not the case. I mean, two classical examples that you find in so many organizations. It doesn't help that we talk loud and warm about how fantastic people we have in the organization, and we would be nothing without you, and we trust you so much. But not that much. Of course, we need detailed travel budgets. Are you crazy? I mean, hypocrisy, right? Poisonous gaps between what is said and what is done. Or another classical example, it doesn't help that we talk equally loud and warm about collaboration and everybody in the same boat and so on, if everything we do on rewards is about individual bonus. Again, poisonous gaps. And coherence, consistency is very important here. So I mentioned a few of those leadership principles. On the management process side, then we actually address, I would say, almost everything that a CEO, a CFO, or executives would be focused on and be involved in as part of their job. We are talking about and have recommendations about the rhythm of the process. We have recommendations about target setting, forecasting, resource allocation, so how to manage cost, how to evaluate performance, and we have recommendations on rewards. So again, a pretty comprehensive model as such. You mentioned these two traditional management beliefs that we are challenging. And to be a bit blunt, I would argue that traditional management has basically been built on two principles. The first is that you can't trust people. And the second is that the future is predictable and plannable. And we are challenging those two assumptions big time, because it is simply not true. And I think the pandemic as such is quite interesting, because it's somewhat different from earlier crises. We've had crises before, like the finance crisis, but that one and earlier ones basically challenged only this assumption about the future being predictable and plannable. But the pandemic has also kind of busted this second myth. And I'm thinking about home office, people working from home. A lot of organizations have been forced to trust their employees, whether they wanted it or not. And guess what? It works. So if I should look at one benefit coming out of this this horrible crisis or a pandemic, then it must be this: busting myths about traditional management.
It's very interesting that you say that. We've seen a huge uptick in business with Sullivan and Stanley in the last year. And I just think what the pandemic has done has given boards a fresh impetus to look elsewhere from some of the normal big brands. So they're looking for fresh techniques, fresh thinking. You know, the digitization of the workplace isn't going to stop anytime soon. And business agility is at the forefront of many boards. So what have you noticed then, apart from the obvious? So the pandemic's come in. It's brought forward business transformation, I believe, 5 to 7 years. Things like beyond budgeting now is super relevant, always been super relevant, always been a big fan of it. But what have you noticed now when you're speaking to boards where you're being invited in to be that domino for the first thought for beyond budgeting? What are you finding? What are you hearing? Are you seeing now that the people are more hungry now to adopt things like beyond budgeting principles? And then, of course, behind that, more human-to-human based organizations that perhaps flatter in hierarchy, you know, that are actually doing business agility across all of the organization, not just in technology. Are you starting? What are you seeing on the front line?
First of all, we get more and more of these invitations. I was actually having a session with the executive committee of a huge UK company only a few days ago. And what happens these days, which is different from kind of 10 years ago, is, and you mentioned yourself, agile transformation, right? I mean, it seems like any big company out there are on some kind of agile transformation journeys. And they have something in common. They all discover at one point, often late on this journey, that they will never succeed unless they also address the budgeting process and the budgeting mindsets and the stuff that we address in Beyond Budgeting. It's simply impossible. So that has been a very nice trigger for a lot of this interest. And what they also realize, or what you also tell them, is that if you want real change, real transformation, the symbolic effect of changing or addressing not just the budgeting process that everybody hates, but also the performance evaluation appraisal process that everybody hates. And we have views on that as well. Unless you address ideally both, but at least the budgeting process, all talk about radical change is just nice words, right? Because it stands there as a kind of barrier for real transformation. But if you take that decision to also do something radical here, it is a very powerful signal to the organization, because it hits every manager, every single manager. So there's a very strong message in saying we will do something here. It's an equally strong message in the other way, going the other way, if you decide not to do something. So I think more and more executives are understanding that. And the other thing executives are understanding is that they all love innovation, right? Everybody thinks innovation is great. We want to be wonderful, right there in the forefront and better than everybody else. But that enthusiasm for innovation has so far mainly been limited to technology innovation into products and services. What they now slowly realize, and what we tell them, is that there is also something called management innovation, exploring new ways of leading and managing. And you can get just as much competitive advantage out of management innovation as you can get from technology and innovation into products and services. And there are companies out there who openly admit that we have no advantage whatsoever in what we produce and what we sell. We find it in the way we lead and manage. And the great thing with management innovation is that so far it is not yet a very crowded place, right? Technology innovation is the very crowded place because everybody is into it. Management innovation, not yet the crowded place because it is scary, right? Kicking out the budget, are you crazy? But the fact that it is a scary place means that it is, there are so many opportunities to move also into that innovation arena to get the competitive advantage, right? And that is also something more and more executives are understanding.
And language is so powerful. I mean, if you think about digital means so many things to so many different people when organizations are going in digital transformation, and we always advise to get language out straight out the gates. I think it's the same with Agile. Sometimes Agile switches people on, switches people off. You could say the same with Lean. So talk about some of your views on the right language you're using to align groups of executive to go on that journey, which, you know, in essence is to get a better business performance, less bureaucracy, and move faster.
Well, first of all, I'm quite sensitive to language, and there are a few labels that I think we should leave behind us. One of them is actually performance management, right? I don't like that label. I find it quite negative for two reasons, because it's I find it quite negative, because what you basically are saying is that if we don't manage your performance, there will be no performance. And secondly, I think there's quite some illusion into this. I think our ability to manage performance in today's business and people realities is actually quite limited compared to what we often like to think as executives or managers or finance people or HR people. So I think we should stop talking about managing performance. We should talk more about enabling performance, creating conditions for great performance to take place. And I often use traffic as a metaphor for explaining what I mean here, because in traffic, we would also like to experience good performance, a safe and good flow. And there are kind of basically two different ways of achieving that. One is the traffic light, which is a way of managing performance, right? Traffic authorities are, through programmed traffic lights, managing performance very directly. And by the way, based on assumptions that are often quite outdated, and the one who is managing is not in the situation. The roundabout is actually about something else. This is about creating conditions for great performance to take place. That is about enabling performance. And in that roundabout, then drivers have the autonomy to make decisions.
Love that. Quick pragmatic question for you. What are the barriers? So let's take a step back. We talk a lot at Sullivan and Stanley about, you know, the industrial era. Corporates are set up for an industrial era. They're not set up for industry 4.0, where the world's going. You talk about VUCA world. We talk about a VUCA world. It's hard, right, to transform from old to new. It's what keeps us in business. It's what, you know, of course, keeps your speaking and consulting business too. But what do you see as the big barriers to this crossover to the new world? Is it fear of losing control? Is it old management theater vibes and technique? I don't know. I'd be interested to get your view on it. But, you know, what would you say is the root cause of the barriers to beyond budgeting principles, business agility, just moving from old to a newer, more relevant form of a business?
Well, I think there are several, and one is, of course, this thinking that, well, we've always done it like this, and everybody else is doing it. That is fortunately changing, since a number of companies are starting out here. But I think you also pointed to one important one, control, and the fear of losing control. And I understand that fear. I've had it myself. But what we need to understand is a lot of the controls that we think we have, they are nothing but illusions of control. Of course, it feels comfortable to have next year described with a million details and decimals, but the only thing we know is that we don't know, right? So we are, in a way, fooling ourselves. And if we don't have control, however we define it, it is better to acknowledge that we don't have control and act accordingly than to think that we have control and act accordingly. So I think that is a barrier for many. The interesting thing is that when companies have jumped and tried this out, the fear disappears, because they experience that the stuff actually works. And as I said earlier, people get braver along the way. One example, and at Equinor, one discussion that we have today that we couldn't have had 5-10 years ago is about target setting. Do we need all these targets? Right. I think we are on autopilot that if we measure something, there has to be a target. I would heavily challenge that assumption. People say that we need targets in order to set direction. We need targets to evaluate performance. Well, there are many other ways of setting direction than announcing 29.2. And you can absolutely evaluate performance without having preset the target. Because, you know, think about it. When we set the target, an annual target, we sit in the autumn year before, and we are trying to describe what does good performance look like 12 months down the road. And if there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fog, how do we know? So it becomes a guess. But once we've concluded, that guess becomes the truth, that everything shall be evaluated against. All that uncertainty, all that fog is gone afterwards, right, at the end of the year. So it's much easier afterwards to have a view on what was good performance than to pre-decided 12 months earlier. So just one example of discussions that, it will be interesting to see where we are going here, but there are companies out there who have operated without budgets, without targets for many, many years with great success. I've written an article about it. It's called Hitting the Target but Missing the Point.
And where could we find that, Bjarne?
You'll find it on my LinkedIn account. It was
okay, great. Is a recent one, is it?
That's a year old or something.
Yeah, okay. Are you allowed to say who the company is? Is it mentioned in the article, or are you under NDA?
No, it says, one company is the Swedish bank Handelsbanken.
Yes.
It has around 700 branches in Northern Europe, quite big in the UK, by the way. And this bank has, since 1970, operated without budgets, without targets, and without individual bonuses.
Wow.
With fantastic performance. It's simply amazing. This bank has been performing better than the average of its competitors every single year since 1972. It's among the most cost-effective universal banks in Europe. And the bank has never needed any help from the authorities, any bailout, because they messed it up. Right? It can't be a coincidence. A radically different management model from most other banks, and this sustained great performance. So that is one of several examples of companies operating in radically different ways, including in this case, no targets.
And it's easy to find case studies on Handelsbanken, I could imagine, through researching and getting a signpost from your blog.
Absolutely, and I also have a chapter on the bank in my book, as you say. So
practically, I've just got a question. So. Forgive me, but let's focus on budgets for this one. So, Bjarne, we've used you a few times to great success, and we very much enjoy collaborating with you. So, as you know, we were working with a financial services organization, helping them transform from a bureaucratic, monopolized financial services org structure to a faster fintech platform-based organization. Difficult piece of work. Clearly, we started from within technology, because primarily it is a technology-based business. And we did bring you in to help us with the CFO function, of course. And I'd like to quote something in a recent blog that you mentioned, which I really liked. So it goes as follows. You mentioned the agile principle of continuous delivery of software functionality is a classic example of philosophy crash. Budgets are made once a year with an annual delivery of decisions and resources, and not continuously as needs appear and things change. Where do you get started with that? So you're going, you're walking in, and sometimes it is that you've got the COO has sponsored it, the CEO might have sponsored it. More often than not, it's the CTO and the CIO, CDO, whatever. Can't keep up with different acronyms. Agility is starting to permeate throughout the organizations. It's coming from the technology function. I'm not picking on the CFO, but it is just one to use as a particular example. Traditional way of doing budgets and then going into rolling budgets. Where do you start with that? And how do you take that CFO and the finance team on that function? And is it, do you find it easier to flip that function or more challenging? Or how do you go about that to get them on the journey? Or is that very similar to what you mentioned earlier, that once they taste it, there's no going back?
Well, first of all, I mean, some people, especially finance people, but also managers, executives, they find, at least initially, the whole beyond budgeting model a bit big, a bit scary, because it is big stuff we are addressing, both on leadership and fundamental management processes. So I can understand that that hesitation or fear. But the good news is that we have a very safe place to get started, and safe, excuse the pun, this has nothing to do with that stuff, but a place that is not scary. It is more linked to the budgets, and it's very logical, and it is about asking ourselves a very simple question: why do we budget? What's the purpose of a budget? And when I say budget here, I'm talking about not just cost budgets, but also investment budgets, about cash flow budgets and balance sheets and profit and loss, the whole thing. And if you ask people that question, then almost everybody would come up with three different reasons or purposes. The first one is target setting. Right? We use budget to set targets, financial targets, sales targets, production targets. The second purpose is forecasting. We want to understand next year's cash flow, financial capacity. And the third purpose is resource allocation that you just talked about. Handing out bags of money to the organization on OPEX, CAPEX, operating costs and investments. And it might seem very efficient to solve all three in one process and one set of numbers. But that is also the problem. And let me explain why. Imagine we are on our way into a budget process at corporate level. We want to understand next year's cash flow, financial capacity. So we ask people on the sales revenue side, what's your best number for next year? But everybody knows that the number I'm sending upstairs will come back to me as a target for next year, maybe with a bonus attached. And that insight might do something to the level of numbers submitted. Moving to the cost investment side, we ask the same people, other people, what's your best number for next year? Everybody knows that this is my only shot at getting access to resources for next year. And maybe some also remember that 20% cut from last year. And that insight and that memory might also do something to the level of numbers submitted. And this is a problem, not just because it destroys the quality of numbers, but also because it stimulates behaviors, which I would call at least borderline unethical, right? The lowballing, the gaming, the sandbagging, the resource hoarding, the internal negotiations. This is not the kind of behaviors we would like to see. I'm not necessarily blaming people behaving like that because they are responding to the system that we ask them to operate within, but the outcome and result is still unethical behaviors. Fortunately, and here is the good news, there's a very simple solution. We can continue to do each of these three things, but we should do them and solve them in three separate processes because these are different things. A target is an aspiration. It's what we want to happen. While a forecast is an expectation. It's what we think will happen, whether we like what we see or not. And resource allocation is about optimization of scarce resources to get to where we want to. And by separating, we can not only allow for targets to be more ambitious than forecast, but more importantly, this opens up a huge improvement agenda. And we can have great discussions about how can we set targets that inspire and stretch people without feeling stretched, that are more VUCA robust. And some, as I said, move on to discussions about, do we need all these targets? How can we get the politics out of forecasting so that we know that we can trust the numbers. And we don't need a million details here. This is not accounting. We are looking at the future and there's uncertainty. We can't apply an accounting mindset when looking at the future. And last but not least, how can we find new, different and better ways of managing cost? And last but not least, how can we organize each of these processes on a rhythm that better reflects not just the individual purpose, but also the kind of business we are into? So the good news here is that when people say that it's impossible to operate without a budget, then my response would be, well, here we still do what the budget tried to do for us. Right? But because we've separated, we can do each one in much better ways. And the other important thing is that once you start on those improvement discussions, it is very often a backdoor into the bigger beyond budget discussions. Target setting, what really motivates the knowledge worker, resource allocation, do we need detailed travel budgets if we say that we trust people, and so on and so on. So I've helped a lot of companies around the world to get started. And with the majority, this is where we started. Separating the budget purposes is pure logic. It's not scary, but a great way to get started.
And how does that typically manifest itself? Is it
Do you spend a day with the executive group? Would that be a usual place that you would start to introduce beyond budgeting and how that actually, could start to work for any organization to help them on their journey? Is that how it usually start?
Yeah. Some years ago, it was more usual to get the invitation from the finance organization than from the executive team. But that is definitely changing these days. So yes, that is very often the starting point. But still, sometimes this do start in finance, and then we help them to get the executive team on a little bit later.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Good. So where do you see this movement going in the next decade? So you mentioned it, was born sort of 2005, 16 or so years later. Post-pandemic, hunger for new techniques. Business agility has never been more relevant than ever for obvious reasons. Where do you see this movement going, Bjart?
I'm very optimistic for many reasons. Again, the pandemic has given us a big boost. The other thing is that these many communities that I've been talking about are joining forces. We are kind of sharing each other's ideas here, building on each other. And again, there are many great other communities out there. Lean Agile, obviously, but sociocracy, humanocracy, holocracy as some examples. And the more we can join forces, the stronger we get. And I'm convinced that in 15, 20 years, when we look back at what was traditional management in 2021, I think we will smile, even have a laugh. Just like we today smile about the days before the internet or the smartphone, for that sake. And how long is that? So this stuff, it will happen. And as organizations, we can choose to be vanguards, early movers, to get competitive, sustainable competitive advantage, or we can choose to be dragged into this as one of the last ones. And that should be a very simple choice.
Be the pioneer or the laggard.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Bjart, it's been an absolute pleasure. Just hearing you, I always try to keep between 40 and 50 minutes for the reasons that we discuss. As someone who's an avid podcast listener, I'm usually in the car or in the gym. So we try and keep it to that time frame. I could have asked many questions. I'm sure we could have spent a longer time on this. I mean, personally, I'd like to just say for the record that I'd love you to anchor our next client event, if that's okay. And we can take that offline.
Thank you.
I think it would be good. You've done that before for us with clients. I recommend anyone listening to this to speak to Bjart if this has piqued your interest. To bring him into your organization or start that conversation, start looking into the beyond budgeting journey. But how else can people engage with you next, Bjart? If anyone's listening to this and thinking, I like the sound of this, I want to investigate more, I want to research more, I'd be interested in speaking to Bjart or the Beyond Budgeting Institute. How can they go about that?
You can reach me at LinkedIn or Twitter. I would also recommend that you check out the Beyond Budgeting Roundtable website, bbrt.org. We've had a few technical glitches lately, but try again if you don't come in. That has a wealth of information about what this is, and also about my colleagues. This is not a one-man journey. We are a small group of people behind this, check me out on social media. It's a good place to start.
Good. Well, we'll put those all in the show notes. But I just wanted to say personal thanks for joining me on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to speaking with you soon and definitely meeting with you soon later this year once we're allowed.
Thanks for the talk, Pat, and great to see you again.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Bjart. All the best.
Thanks for listening to the Change Society podcast. And if you want to know more about how SNS can help you and your organization, there are three main ways. Number one, subscribe to this podcast. and also check out some of our cutting-edge knowledge and ideas on the Insights page of our website. Number two, if you're a senior leader or change agent, join one of our change communities to network and share with like-minded individuals, both online and off. And finally, if you need to solve a problem across business change, agility, delivery, or transformation, and don't want to go down the traditional consulting route, shoot us an email to hello@sullivanstanley.com.